What's up, everybody? It's Roger and James here from the Disney Podcast. In this episode, we're going to be talking all about the worst aspects of 2018 from the Disney side, our personal choices of things that maybe not necessarily bad, but maybe were the mediocre or kind of just things that just flopped or things like that. And you've just got to go straight into my biggest one of the year and Wrinkle of Time. Whoa, was that a stinker? That was one of those movies of... It came out of the cinema and my wife was kind of interested and I'm like, we'll wait a bit. The reactions weren't doing too great. So rented it when it came out. Oh man, I was bored stiff. I actually did actually get my phone out while I was watching it because I'd got that point of what's going on in the internet world, because I was like, this is so boring. It's like you're trying to set this big world up and all this amazing world and this girl so important to the entire universe and I don't care. I'm not interested. It's that kind of thing. It's like I had no connection with the book beforehand. So I wasn't going in with expectations from the book. I was just watching this thing and it was just like, this is such a generic, bland movie for something that costs so much. I've not seen Nutcracker because I kind of had this, I'm getting that because it feels like that was exactly the same story. A young girl gets lost in some different worlds and has to save everybody. That kind of the, and that one hasn't done very much either, and it's almost like parallel between the two seems of the story.
I actually didn't even realize Nutcracker was out, to be honest. I know it's been out for more than a month and I was like, when is that coming out? Oh no, it's been out for a while. And I never saw Wrinkle in Time. I do remember liking the book as a kid, though I couldn't tell you much of what happened. I know they're Tesseracts and stuff like that. Yeah. But yeah, I just, once the reviews came in, I was just like, I'm not really going to bother. And then by the time it came out on DVD, I forgot. So I can't officially put it on this list because I haven't seen it. So I can't judge for myself, but it probably belongs on here. So
yeah, I think it is on Netflix now. It didn't take long to get to Netflix.
No, it didn't.
And I think that's sometimes, this is the kind of thing, isn't it? Of these kind of movies of Disney are trying sometimes to do some different stuff,
which is good.
But when they don't work, they then just kind of recluse back and don't do anything else. I am worried about them looking at things like Wrinkle of Time and Nutcracker and going, oh, these movies aren't selling. And it's like, well, no, because you didn't do a great job in them. That was the big problem of you can put all these big fancy graphics together, but if you can't hook the person in with a good story, and just having a big world and putting a kid in it isn't enough anymore. You need more than that.
Yeah, and this is where the disconnect between the viewing audience and the creators and the executive audience tend to be very different. When executives see these movies and they see how well they do or not well in the theaters, they don't tend to go with, oh, it's a bad movie. Because I'm generalizing here, of course, but generally when the executives look at them, they go, there was some external factor that prevented people from going to them. There's some separation between the quality of a movie and people going to see movies, which I've never understood why they think that. I mean, there's certainly a small amount of influence, like, you know, Americans typically aren't going to go see Bollywood movies very often, and that will have to do with perception about Bollywood movies and so on and so forth, but we're not talking about that in this case. Like, A Wrinkle in Time got very poor word of mouth. I think a lot of people were off put by the marketing for it and just the general, like, what is going on weirdness of it. People are like, I'm not going to go see it. And then, but the executives are going to go, oh, people don't want original content. What we should do is green light, in addition to Lion King live action, we should do Lion King 1.5 and Lion King 2 Simba's Prides as live actions right after that, because people want those. And yeah, you know, between this and Nutcracker, and we talked about the Artemis Fowl trailer a week or two ago, you know, I really want Disney to continue trying new stuff rather than, you know, giving us the Black Cauldron live action movie or something like that. But not if they're going to keep making bad ones.
Yeah.
So,
I'm hoping, really, to be honest, that Fox the Fox acquisition will allow them a little bit more flex to flesh the models a bit. But it just, these movies just did not grab. They, you know, the, I don't know, it's that kind of that marketing thing of, you know, I, you know, it's like going through the motions of what they're doing. Okay, we're going to have a doll. We're going to have some figures. We're going to have some stuff. We're going to then have the movie, have the trailer. We'll have the movie. We'll go to Netflix and that's it. And there was not a one bit of interest in a single story. It just literally, that's when, you know, I'm looking at it like for my stats and going, there is no, the interest in this stuff is just not hitting right. It's like, you're talking like even the trailer doesn't, you know, it's like, it's that thing of like Lion King and Endgame got these massive numbers for those trailers because they're already well-known established things. And this is the trouble. They tried something new and it didn't work. But then they tried something new with Black Panther and it did work. Or, you know, they tried something with Coco and it worked, or Moana. You know, these things work, but sometimes I just feel, and I do wonder if they went a little bit too PC with these movies, and people don't want that on the big screen, or are willing to pay for that on the big screen. If PC is dull for most people, and therefore it doesn't excite people.
Well, it's in how you present it, of course. There's nothing wrong with doing PC or with, you know, having a diverse cast. The problem becomes when that becomes your primary marketing point. You know, Black Panther was not marketed as a movie for Black people. It was marketed as a superhero movie.
Yeah.
And then it resonated with the culture, and people were like, this is really good. We need to go see this. And then but you know, it took off culturally after being established as a good movie, and the marketing wasn't around the culture of it.
Yeah.
The same for Wonder Woman, obviously not a Disney movie, but you know, it was first and foremost a superhero movie. And then once it was good, people were like, it's really good. And it's got a woman lead, you know, and when you lead with it's a woman superhero, you're kind of sending the wrong message. Yeah. You need to go, this is a really good movie.
Yeah,
and it's got a woman super.
Because that was the problem, I think, with Wrinkle of Time. I was like, oh, that's the first time a woman director has had this, and it's pretty much an entire, primarily female cast, and things like that. And it's like, you know, you shouldn't have to tell us that. It's the trailer should interest me on its own as a good story, and am I interested in it? And then from that point, you then go to it. And I do think Oprah Winfrey had an impact on this movie, in America. Us over here, she's just Oprah from the TV show and that sits on the couch. But in America, you have a very different, she's very polarizing because of political stuff. And that will have hit this movie just as much, because I remember there being a big storm about it when it all come out. And it's like, that's not what this movie needed. This movie didn't need that.
Yeah. And I don't even know. It's one of those things where being PC or being like targeted at a cultural or a gender or whatever, you know, when the marketing is about that rather than how good the movie is, you know, there's a problem. It was the same with the Ghostbusters movie a couple of years ago, where all the marketing was like, it's the Ghostbusters, but they're women and the director is a woman. It's like, but is the movie any good?
That's the key thing, because it to me, like you say, you know, like Wonder Woman was such an amazing movie, and that's the big key thing. And it's like Nutcracker was just a movie which come along at the wrong time with a very busy schedule, with just something as well of people going, it's a Nutcracker. Well, yeah, that's the bit with the sugar plum, and it just didn't catch anyone's attention, and that is the big problem. And you know, and I think, and while I don't want to put it on this list, Solo, I really enjoyed that movie, but I know my dad watched it a couple of weeks ago and didn't really think much of it, and people generally were a bit like, "Meh, what was it?" And it came out, and it didn't do, as far as the box office, it was one of the flops. It didn't do very well. It's the lowest money maker for Solo, for Star Wars, whether or not that's to do with The Last Jedi, the backlog, but it also was just a story that people weren't interested in. They weren't. I think if it'd been a Han Solo movie with Harrison Ford, as an old Harrison Ford, you know, just an offshoot of episode, you know, be set between 6 and 7, it probably would have done a lot better numbers.
Yeah, I think the fact that this solo movie exists and it exists in the time before A New Hope, it was a perfectly fine movie. But I said this in a review and I still stand by this. The fact that it exists at all tells me that Marvel doesn't have, or sorry, that Lucasfilms and Disney don't understand the property that they have. Han Solo as a character works better when his past is a mystery. When he's talking about the Kessel Run and you go, I did it in 12 parsecs. You're like, wait, but a parsec is not a measurement of time. And then when you get into that in The New Hope and you haven't seen this character before that point, you're like, is this guy just full of it? Is he just making stuff up as he goes along? Is he a good character? Is he going to side with them? Is he going to just throw them to the Imperials the first chance he gets? And having a prequel where you establish, no, he is a good character. He the only reason he's not a rebel is he's out for himself, but he's anti-Empire. And the Kessel Run did happen in 12 parsecs because of this Maw and stuff like that. You're like, no, this works better when you don't explain it. When the audience is... That said, the movie was fine. I'm not going to put it on my worst list, but it's... Yeah, there are a lot of questions about the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just that kind of thing of it just didn't hit. I mean, I think they were trying to set this up to be a franchise. I think they wanted this to go thing. I'll be honest, I remember just walking around Disney World and I had my Solo t-shirt on and I was, you know, pumped for Solo because I'd just seen it. And people were coming up to me, asking me in the queues and stuff. And going, oh, is it any good? I'm going, that kind of weird thing. Like, it's a Star Wars movie and you're in Disney World. You shouldn't be asking me, is it any good? Because I think expectations for it were low. And you don't want that from a Star Wars movie. And, you know, even Bob Iger's been like, yeah, we overdid it. We kind of made some mistakes. We need to let the franchise... I mean, they've even said, and there was something I was reading the other day, like, Legoland is not having a Star Wars thing because they want to let the franchise rest a little bit. Like, basically, they want to go completely silent in 2019 until Episode 9 comes out because they just don't know what they don't... I think they're like... We just want to kind of keep everything quiet a little bit because we want people to forget.
Yeah, and they went into the Star Wars franchise on the assumption that they could immediately make it a parallel to the Marvel franchise, even maybe pump it up to 2 movies a year, and it would just become this biannual thing, and people would just be like, yeah, Star Wars, Star Wars. And then what they forgot was Marvel built up to that, you know, Iron Man, and then Incredible Hulk, and people kind of brush over Incredible Hulk for pretty good reason. And then it took a couple of years before they started getting into the 2 year two a year cadence, and now they're kind of doing a 2.5 year cadence. And yeah, they needed to prove with Star Wars that yes, these movies are going to be quality. We're giving them the top billing. That, you know, everything is in it, story, special effects, everything is working together. And that, you know, even with Force Awakens and Rogue One, you can tell that there's kind of an emphasis on spectacle rather than on solid storytelling or consistency. And some people are like spectacle all the way, and that's fine. That's, you know, that they are the... You know, they go see the Fast and the Furious movies and the Transformers movies and whatnot.
Like,
and
I want to go see Bumblebee. Okay,
I have zero interest in Bumblebee, but I have no attachment to the Transformers.
John Cena in it. So
but I'm also not saying that these are bad things. You know, going and seeing movies like Transformers just to watch robots beat each other up, because I love Pacific Rim. That's a movie that's just about a giant robot fighting giant monsters. The difference is there's also, not about Pacific Rim, but it's a spectacle movie. But, you know, the older Star Wars, the original trilogy, they had story that backed up the spectacle.
Yeah.
And these ones don't really have that story consistency and narrative to back them up. So they kind of need to come back and do more than that.
Yeah. I also feel like Marvel had, I feel their characters are much more interesting in terms of each individual hero is his own individual thing. It had to be good enough to push its own comic book and then its own. And because of, whereas Star Wars, you can't just say, let's have a movie about Han Solo or Princess Leia or Obi-Wan Kenobi as well as it doesn't. Then they don't quite pull the same. And it Solo proved that. And unfortunately, it was just that kind of situation, I think, of it. It was a flop, but I don't think it... I personally enjoyed it. I liked it, but it wasn't... It wasn't good enough.
Let's also qualify the statement flop. It made money. It broke its thing. It's only a flop because it didn't meet expectations, not because it was a failure as a movie. And there is still a chance that we could see a sequel with Kira's storyline picking up and the cameo of Darth Maul picking up at the end and so on. And I will say, I think also, I'm speaking from a fan's point of view here, I would much rather that they told stories in between the end of Return of the Jedi and the beginning of the first The Force Awakens. There is 40 years of continuity there that is almost completely unexplored. The era between the prequels and the original trilogy is very well explored. There have already been two cartoon series. There's now been two movies. You know, that's fine. Let it go. It's where it's at. There's still room to tell more stories there, but they don't have to be connected to the Rebellion. They don't have to be connected to the Empire. They don't have to be connected to any of these characters. Do something else with that and give us some meat. What the heck happened in 40 years that brought us from the ending of Return of the Jedi with the Ewoks all jumping around and serving Stormtrooper barbecue to The Force Awakens, where the Rebellion apparently just decided they were done and left and disbanded their entire military for no apparent reason. And they let the Empire be reborn as the First Order. And it's just like, and not even be reborn as the First Order. They're reborn as the stupid First Order. Snoke is a moron. Hux is an idiot. Kylo Ren is just a ball of rage with no direction. And they are nowhere near as interesting as the Empire is. So how did we get to this point? And yes, I know there are some books that kind of cover this area a little bit, but that there's 40 years. There's 40 years of buildup to how we got from point A to point B. And now we've moved from worst of 2018 into a rant about the current state of Star Wars. So
yes,
let's bring it back on track.
Yeah, I've got one thing to add back onto my worst list. I'm going to go back to Marvel. And it's actually kind of two things, really. Well, actually three things. The Netflix series of this year, we had, Jessica Jones season 2. We had Iron Fist season 2, Luke Cage season 2, and Daredevil season 3. Now, I am halfway through Daredevil season 3, and I'm enjoying it. That's definitely not on the list. Jessica Jones season 2 took me months to get through. I was bored. It took me so long to get through. Luke Cage season 2, I stopped about halfway through season 2 because it was a slugfest, which then left me onto Iron Fist season 2, which I've not even started. I might watch them next year. Might be a good time to watch them because there might be a bit of a stopgap where we've not got anything, but they just really just, I mean, this whole thing about them cancelling them and all the rest of it, the interest in those series this year just for me went from the best series to one of the most, they just were bland. I just don't know what it was with them.
Yeah, so they're definitely not going on the worst for me. And Daredevil was really good, but there were problems and they did just kind of pop out there. It was like, oh, Luke Cage is out. I didn't even realize that was coming. But both Luke Cage and Jessica Jones were too long. They should have been shorter series. Maybe the 10 episodes that Iron Fist was, or the 8 that Defenders was, that would have been ideal. Jessica Jones started really well and then just went completely off the rails with the whole mother storyline. I just was like,
I think the thing is, the first season with Kilgrave was amazing. I loved it. It was one of my best series I think I've ever, that was so great. And then the second season was just like, she didn't have anyone to fight against. And the interest with her mom was like, I'm not interested.
Yeah. And I understand why they wanted to do the story with her mom, because it's a very important aspect of Jessica's character. This whole, I lost my family and, you know, that I'm full of rage and angst because I was an orphan child and I was adopted and all that stuff. And that's a very interesting angle. Bringing her mom back as someone stronger than her, just was like, wait, why? Why are you doing this? It would have been much more interesting if she'd just been a normal person who was being manipulated by someone, or I don't know, something like that. But then also Jessica just being like at the end, oh, you know, I've been best friends with Patsy my entire life, but I'm just going to ditch her to go off with my psychotic mom. And which leads me, of course, back to the ending of all three of these series, not Daredevil. We'll talk that. I'm almost done with Daredevil. You're not done with Daredevil, so we're not going to talk about that one, but it is much better. But Iron Fist, Luke Cage, and Jessica Jones all ended in very good positions for good season threes. Whether or not season two was good is irrelevant. Jessica Jones ends with Patsy Walker gaining her Hellcat powers, or at least starting to. Jessica's in a much better position now that the mother story is out of the way and she's kind of fully embraced going back to Private Eye. Luke Cage, not to go into too much spoilers for you, is now in a position where he owns a nightclub and he could potentially be in a absolute power corrupts absolutely kind of situation. Iron Fist has lost his power by the end and has instead gained the mystical guns of Kun Lun, and they're doing basically the Five Immortal stories, which is an absolutely great story and has a lot of potential because, you know, they would be probably going into a tournament at some point, which would be great. But obviously we're not going to get any of these three because, well, Jessica, we might, but the other two are done.
Yeah. We've got Jessica Jones season three coming up next year. We have got, Punisher too. There is a thing that apparently there is a 2-year contract that they can't appear anywhere else. So late 2020, we could see Iron Fist and Luke Cage return. I think this happening. I think this will happen. I think they're going to take what reaction they've had and be saying there's an interest here. There's money to be made. But I think that's pretty much probably a good time to kind of leave what was the worst of 2018.
I'm going to toss one more.
Oh, you got one little.
You'll disagree with me, but it's Venom. Venom was atrociously bad. Sorry, I'm not going to go into any more depth. We talked about plenty of stuff already. This is long enough. You really liked Venom. I thought it was terrible.
It was better than I was expecting. I don't know if it was. I wouldn't say it was great. I had some problems with it, but
you'd put it in the mediocre pile rather than the bad pile. Venom was my wrinkle in time, where by the end of it I stopped 20 minutes. I just couldn't finish it, and well before the 20 minutes I was on my tablet just going, oh, Disney emoji blitz, I'll play that for a little while. Oh, Venom's saying something stupid. Okay, all right, that's it. Venom is the final one on my list. Let's go ahead and move on.
Yeah, so on that note, guys, thank you very much for watching. Be sure to check us out over at thiskingdom.com. Like, follow, and subscribe. Quick note just as well about for the week of Christmas. We've only got the one show going out over Christmas. We're having a little bit of we're having a week off recording because it's that falls on Christmas. So we're going to be going through all of the highlights of 2019 of what we're looking forward to. And we'll be back the following week as per normal. But anyway, guys, thank you very much for joining us. We'll be back soon. Laters.
Later.